I'm Tanzina Vega, and this is The Takeaway. This week, Customs and Border Protection announced that hackers had stolen license plate images and travelers' photos in what some inside the agency are calling a, quote, major incident. Hackers reportedly broke into the systems of a company called Perceptix, which operates license plate readers for the government agency. According to a preliminary report from CBP, the hack compromised the data of approximately 100,000 people. There are still lots of unanswered questions about how the biometric data ended up in the hands of hackers and what can happen when law enforcement fails to keep its data secure. Tom Claiborne is here to walk us through at least some of those questions. He's a reporter for The Register, an IT news site. And Leon Fresco joins us as well. He's the former Deputy Assistant Attorney General for the Justice Department and head of the Office of Immigration Litigation under the Obama administration. Tom, let's start with you. What exactly was in these stolen files?
Hi. Pretty much everything at the company, it seems. It's a lot of the images in question appear to be test data from license plate readers. These are images that were captured on freeways in 2017. So they're not, I think, current information as far as we can tell. But then there's a whole bunch of other stuff in terms of like Exchange servers, you know, Microsoft Exchange email servers and internal files, and a lot of stuff that you wouldn't really care about in a data breach, like MP3 files from someone's PC. So it seems like somebody had access to sort of the entire IT infrastructure of a server run by this company.
So, Tom, a CBP official told the Washington Post that the hacked materials were limited to the U.S. border with Canada. Do you see anything that supports that or suggests otherwise?
Yeah, I mean, I looked through some of the lists of files last night, and the locations that are identifiable from the file names are things like Del Rio, Texas, Veterans Bridge in Brownsville, Texas, Columbus, New Mexico, I'm assuming, and rather than Ohio, Santa Teresa, New Mexico, Hidalgo, Texas. I think there's a mention of Confederation Bridge, which I believe is in Canada. So I think their description of it is pretty consistent, but there is quite a bit of it.
Activity both on the Canadian-U.S. border and also on the U.S. southern border.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And Tom, you were contacted by the hacker directly, and it's someone who calls themselves Boris Bullet Dodger. Is it the same Boris that carried out a recent ransomware attack against a German company?
We believe so. If you're referring to the Citicomp hack last month, we believe that it's the same pseudonym, at least. It's always hard to attribute who is behind those pseudonyms. It could be one or a group of people. And this group has also been involved in other incidents, as far as we can tell. When we looked at their Tor site, which is on the dark web, there were other organizations besides Perceptix and Citicomp. So I actually corresponded with him this morning to see whether he would answer a question that I put to him, and he never got back to me about, which was about his motivation, and he confirmed that he did this for money. And he declined to give any information about the technical details of the attack. In other words, the vulnerability he's used, because he said it would compromise his ongoing operations. So,
and we just did a report on how the city of Baltimore was hacked, and also the hackers there were asking for money. Tom, did he get his money, this Boris Bullet Dodger?
We don't know. We don't know if this was if there was a ransomware demand. We haven't heard from Perceptix. They haven't said anything about that. So that would certainly fit with past precedent, but you can never tell. It could simply be, someone doesn't like the way a negotiation's going, or just doesn't like an organization and wants to dump it, or they feel like they can make more money just selling it to people online.
Leon, I want to bring you in here. What does the Border Patrol use this data for?
Well, the license plate data is actually very important because it's tracking several things. It's tracking the frequency of cars that are coming across the border. You know, the higher frequency of a car coming across the border, you'd want to know, why is it coming across? Is it coming across for legitimate trade and commerce, or is it coming across as a smuggling entity? You'd want to match the photos to those license plates to see if the owner of the car is actually driving the car, or is it being used by a smuggling organization. And so there are legitimate law enforcement uses for these license plate and photo data, but obviously you don't want them getting into the hands of the wrong people, because if they know this information of who's coming across and how, then they can manipulate it for their ends.
And I guess that's the next question, which is, now that the data has been hacked, it's available, who else might be interested in this data from the Perceptix cameras?
Well, suppose I was a smuggler and I got information that showed me 30,000 cars that come into the border three times a week, and maybe they're coming in to just perform normal housework, or maybe they're coming in for gardening or whatever else. Those people are subject to potential blackmail, extortion, and attacks by smugglers who say, look, you better also smuggle drugs in for me, or I will kidnap you or attack your family. Or they may even unwittingly use these cars and put things in the cars and collect them at their location without the person even knowing that they were an accomplice to smuggling drugs or other contraband. And so from that perspective, this information getting into the wrong hands can, in fact, be very dangerous.
I'm speaking with tech reporter Tom Claiborne and former Deputy Assistant Attorney General Leon Fresco about the data breach at the border. Leon, let's talk a little bit about what is considered a privacy right at the border. First, are there? Does anyone have any privacy rights at the border? And tell us what the difference is there.
Well, sure. So from the perspective of all non-citizens, your privacy rights at the border are basically nothing, because that's where the immigration law has made it very, very clear that if you're trying to enter the United States as a non-citizen, you have no rights. You're at the complete mercy of the Border Patrol. And then even if you're a citizen, you don't have the rights to your license plate information, to the extent that your license plate is public. It's everybody can see it. And so to say that you would have a privacy right over your license plate is not the case. But the problem is, when the government compiles this information and it starts merging it with other information that is attendant to your license plate, then the question is, well, what privacy rights do you have to your whole pattern of movement, which is what the government ends up tracking? And that's where this becomes a problem, because as the government collects this data that can then be consolidated with other data so that we know more things about you, and then that data gets in the hands of other people that can easily exploit it, that's where the problem is. And so this is where the policymakers have to do much more work in terms of, even if you have a thing like a license plate, which you have no privacy rights over, well, what is that data being combined with, and should it be, or should we not collect this data then because of the fear of what it can lead to?
And also off of that point, Tom, this data is also available on the dark web, and there are privacy implications involved in that, right?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. A lot of what can happen with the data depends upon the, you know, sophistication and motives of those trying to use it. You know, at a very simple level, it could be something as, you know, like looking for credit card information and abusing that for identity theft. But as Mr. Fresco pointed out, the risks of taking this data and combining it with other data set raises a whole bunch of other potential scenarios that are undesirable for people. And, you know, it's been shown that data can be, that has been, you know, anonymized, can be de-anonymized. And, you know, when it's combined with other data sets, you have the ability to track specific individuals and their movements, potentially to know who they're meeting with. It could be abused not only by terrorists, but by people who are trying to find out information about law enforcement, for example, by, you know, because there will be those sorts of people who are captured, and the images may have face pictures, because they may not just be license plates. It depends on how they're framed. And there was a whole bunch of other information that's non-image oriented that was in this breach that tells about, you know, contracts and people involved in these systems. So all of that raises, you know, potential questions. The issue, I think, for a lot of companies and organizations is how they retain the data and how they store it, because, you know, best practice generally seems to be that you break it into parts and encrypt it and hold as little of it as possible. You know, among security and privacy people, you'll often hear it said that data is a toxic asset because it exposes you to so much liability if you fail to keep it safe.
Leon, how concerning is cybersecurity for the CBP? I mean, how far along are they in knowing how to deal with these types of hacks and attacks?
I think the problem is in all of these different agencies, we're fighting the last war. So now CBP knows that it has problems with subcontractors hacking, being hacked. And so now it will deal with that. And then something else will emerge. And so what happens is we're not at a proactive front on cybersecurity at A, all of our agencies, B, for all of their uses, and then C, for their contractors, and then D, for their subcontractors. And so there's too many areas of vulnerability here, and it only seems to figure out that something is important and should be protected after it's hacked. And so that's the problem, is that the amount of targets are infinite, basically, at this point, and the amount of resources for cybersecurity that the government can focus on are finite. And so you only realize that a certain data set could actually be exploited and can be used for the detriment of the American people once it's hacked. And so this is the number one 21st century challenge for the government, is to say, how can we take our finite cybersecurity resources and employ them in a way where we're actually saying up front, this is how you have to protect every piece of data that you have. And how are we actually thinking about this in a way where we're not collecting data and storing it unless it's absolutely, absolutely necessary? All of this seems to be going on without any thought being given to it whatsoever. And so this is why we keep seeing these ad hoc terrible events happening.
And Tom, what, in your opinion, as a reporter here that covers these things, what needs to change? I mean, what's the most effective way that governments can protect their data?
Just simply to keep less of it. And also to have more transparency. I mean, a lot of the problems that we come into is we don't know exactly what's out there and what the risks are, because these organizations don't have any kind of mandatory disclosure, at least in some states. In, you know, California, we're likely to see a privacy breach notice on this, since Californians appear to have been affected. But, as we understand it, the data is still available online through a tool called rsync, despite what has been said about this. So there's a lot of energy that needs to be put into having less data to be exposed.
Tom Claiborne is a cybersecurity reporter for The Register, and Leon Fresco is the former Deputy Assistant Attorney General who headed the Office of Immigration Litigation under President Obama. Thanks to you both for being with us.
Thank you.